Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Martin Blankers to the podcast. Welcome, Martin.
Thank you very much.
So, Martin, you are the general manager of Uptime Works. You know, aside from that, you have a large background in various roles within maintenance and reliability. I've seen you've been a maintenance manager in the past. You've worked in predictive maintenance and a variety of other areas. Although very brief, can you fill in the blanks around your background?
Yes, thanks, James. I think to start off, I had the privilege to be raised in South Africa, and I did my initial education in a university at South Africa. It was very much maintenance and mechanical engineering focused. My first job, I started out as a reliability engineer for a large power generation plant, and about in around 2000, I decided to immigrate to Holland. I was born and raised in a Dutch family, and was quite a natural process for me to decide to move close to Europe and to be in a closer vicinity of more cutting-edge technology, I would say. So when I moved to Holland, I started out at Stora Enso Pulp and Paper, and I was maintenance manager for a large pulp and paper site here in Holland. And I got actually in touch with reliability as a subject, and with the constraints of a large concern like Stora Enso, I had the feeling that I couldn't really fulfill my dreams. And in 2004, I decided to start up my own business with a colleague of mine. And we built up a reliability and maintenance business focused on providing reliability services. And this we'd done for about 12 years, and the business was sold to a company called Acer Technology in Holland. And in 2016, we were incorporated into Acer Technology. And that was basically where I'm still today. In the process, I've had more than 20 years of experience. I finished my master's degree in asset management and reliability. And so, my track record is pretty much maintenance.
All right, excellent. Now, you mentioned that you got started into the mechanical end of things and then started learning about predictive maintenance. So what is predictive maintenance in your own words? The reason I ask is everyone's got a slightly different twist on it.
Yeah, exactly. What I think the very fundamental idea around predictive maintenance is anything that would allow you to predict the condition of an asset in order for this asset to perform the duties it's supposed to perform and to keep on doing it without going down unexpectedly. But predictive maintenance is always also a term that's sometimes very confusingly used. If you take process data, you can use it in a predictive manner to actually provide you information. But if you look at condition-based maintenance or condition-based data, then it's actually data that's collected with a variety of sensors and technologies that is not in relation to process data. So I would say condition-based maintenance or condition-based data, vibration data, infrared, oil analysis, are data sources that normally provide a type of non-destructive source of data that you do not intrude into the normal operation. And when you combine it with process data, you would get something called predictive data or predictive maintenance. So predictive maintenance is a combination for me between reliability or condition-based maintenance and process data.
All right. I'm glad you mentioned that process data. A lot of organizations don't think of using that. You know, if we're looking at flow rates for a pump, but also current draw, we can look at those two and learn a lot about what's going on with that pump. If the impeller's wearing, we're going to draw less current. You know, all these different things can occur and we can use that data. And many organizations, unfortunately, I don't think leverage that process data.
I think we've seen a shift change in Europe in any way in the last couple of months, years. I would say that more and more larger multinational organizations start to understand the benefit of utilizing process data. It's becoming of age with the incorporation of AI or artificial intelligence, and having the ability to look at correlations between the process data parameters. I think in past it was also a huge volume of data that people just did not know or understood how to utilize that data sources to really get information from it. And I think as technology has moved on in the last 4 years, the ability to incorporate data sources, let's say reliability or condition-based data with process data, has given the larger companies in any way the incentive to really start looking at process data and really start to look at the value of process data. I think what is at this stage still very much a pitfall is the quality of process data, because very often the PLCs are the source for process data. They would be collected, but the tags, the calibration of that data. So in any words, the true factor of this data is still sometimes very much questionable. And this sometimes causes companies to collect vast amounts of data and still do not get real information from it. So I think that the process in the coming years would really be to get down to the parameters that really tell something about your condition, that really provides information, and where the true factor of the information is reliable.
Yeah, absolutely correct. There's, you know, there's that lack of quality or integrity in some of those data sources. Yep. But organizations are making great leaps to make sure that data is good. They're taking it, you know, understand combining that with the condition monitoring data that you mentioned previously. So they're not relying it on exclusively. But it's definitely the right step forward using that in conjunction with that condition monitoring data.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and I think also what we have seen is also the willingness of larger corporations to start sharing process data. Or in a couple of years ago, process data would have been there would be a lot of secrecy around process data and a very low willingness to share that data sources with either condition monitoring companies or with service companies or any third party for that matter. And now you see much more willingness that's being created in these companies to share data, even though with some constraints still, but to share this data in a more flexible manner, which allow even third parties to use that data sources to help a client to become more reliable.
Yes, absolutely. There, you know, that data was seen as proprietary. People didn't want to share it, but now I'm seeing more and more of that willingness to share, not just with the third party, but to help develop those algorithms and, you know, the AI and all that in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, from a condition monitoring standpoint, what are the primary technologies that people are using for condition monitoring or predictive maintenance? Vibration always comes to mind, but what else?
I think what was always my, and maybe from my own perspective, what was a really, I mean, the bulk of what we use is vibration, of course. But I think if you look at very fundamental things like inspections, like really inspections that is visual inspections, but as very controlled, is a very fundamental reliability tool that I think is far underrated in terms of its ability to detect early. If you look at oil analysis, or you look at ultrasound or infrared, those are technologies are a little bit more, I think, lesser used and more specific to certain failures or certain failure patterns. But what is very interesting is how do you get the technology to a lower level in the organization where you need less skills, lesser trained or lesser educated people, but allow them to use the technology and gain the maximum benefit from it. And that has always been my aim in terms of how do we make sure that we do not become dependent on extremely highly skilled individuals. And when they decide to leave an organization, that the whole reliability program sort of gets stranded. And especially in third world countries or countries where the skills levels are not so well developed, or where the volume of skilled people are really low, you definitely see that companies struggle to get a reliability program up and running and maintain that. So the focus for me was very much how do we ensure that we create something or develop something that would allow all these technologies to amalgamate in one environment, first of all, and ensure that technicians or engineers with a lower level of education and a lower level of development in this field could still use this without being dependent on third parties or dependent on very expensive service companies to come and provide them with the data. You know, so that I think is more evident than the technologies that we use. I think in the last 10, 15 years, there's very little new technologies that has been developed that we don't know about. I mean, the normal oil analysis, ultrasound, infrared, those have been around for many years. It's just a matter of how you use them.
Yeah, it's, and you know, that was one of the things I was going to ask about is, you know, what is the downsides to some of these traditional technologies? And I think you hit on some of it. You know, you need highly skilled people to interpret that data.
Yeah.
A lot of the software doesn't talk to each other. So if I'm looking at this vibration data and I have this ultrasound data, I have to jump between two different software packages to look at it because they don't talk. So I can't overlay and see trends together.
Exactly.
I see a lot of technicians exporting to Excel all this different data and then building their own graphs and own trend charts to overlap each other so they can see what's actually going on.
I think proprietary software was a huge problem within reliability. The fact that you were actually forced to build a new database every time you want to introduce new technology, you know. So for me, that was really one of the pitfalls around reliability, to make sure it becomes available to the masses. The other thing was to make sure you develop something that is readily available, and a web browser is something that's readily available. Everybody has access to a web browser, provided that you have internet access, but it doesn't require you to install software. And as IT policies and security policies develops through the years, the problem with installing proprietary software is becoming such a huge problem that in large multinationals, it's almost impossible to get anything installed without going through endless hoops of IT policies and security procedures. So for me, that was really some of the really important things to improve. So that we wanted something that if I have a web browser and I have a username and a password, that I could access my reliability data, and that it would all be in one environment. In other words, easy to access anywhere, any place. And also that you would enable people with a very low level of training to do data collection in a very effective manner. So the use of visual aids, pictures, diagrams, step-by-step instructions, those things make reliability nowadays cost-effective and interesting. It's not only providing very smart sensors and very well-developed infrastructure around that, but in some organizations where reliability has still a very low level of maturity, the initial investment must be so low for them to start seeing the benefits of reliability that you need to provide an environment where they could do with the minimum investment in hardware or in technology, still get the maximum gain they can do with very limited training. So if you set up the program right and you help them with visual aids, they should be able to collect data in a manner that would allow them to take part in reliability. And even though you do the analysis remotely, the data collection is the biggest bulk of cost for any organization, and you need to make that simple. In past years, we would have traveled a lot, and most of the invoice would be made up of traveling costs and hotel and lodging, you know. And I think those days are gone. It's not something that's sustainable, not for our own personnel, but also not for clients where they live in a different environment where a euro is far more expensive than a local currency. And I think those are the areas where a lot of reliability development still should and could happen.
Yep, absolutely. You know, that data collection, you got the issues with data quality. All those things just compound and make it difficult, expensive, especially if we don't have that internal skill set internally. Then we have to rely on contractors to do that, and that adds cost and so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what are the foundations that organizations need in place before they jump into predictive maintenance? Do they have to, you know, have an asset hierarchy? Do they have to understand the failure modes of that asset? Is there anything like that they need to have in place first?
I think I want to start off with that they need to believe that reliability can bring them something. And they need to understand that when you start with reliability, it's not only that you start measuring something, because measuring in itself doesn't bring anything. Of course, it's nice to have a very comprehensive asset structure and hierarchy that's in place. It doesn't disqualify you from starting, but it will just make it more difficult, I suppose. It is important to have a unique numbering on equipment. So it's important to understand which equipment is in your plant, what you have. But if it's not down to the nitty-gritty of every component or every bearing, I would say, it doesn't disqualify you to start with reliability. What is required is a belief that reliability will bring you something, that you understand that it will be a workload that will increase initially before it will start delivering on results. But also that you need to get the basics right. And with basics, I mean good housekeeping, visual inspections, even lubrication management. That's, in my opinion, is really basic stuff that needs to be addressed. If you think about the situation that you could measure a bearing, and I would measure it today, and there would be a high value which would result in a work request, and this is because of poor lubrication, I would measure that same bearing in 6 weeks again, and the same result would be there, that the lubrication would be bad. So we don't inject anything or radiate anything into the bearing when we measure it. But when we lubricate well, I would survive many months with well-lubricated bearings, although I wouldn't survive many months with just measuring well. You know, so the fundamentals for me is first, make sure it's clean and you can do the inspection. Secondly, that you can do your lubrication and do it properly. And then third, start with the low-hanging fruit in terms of whatever you're going to do with reliability. Understand how assets will fail. And it doesn't mean that you need to have comprehensive FMECAs in place. Sometimes common sense really works well. You know, we've been to many plants and we've helped many customers with building databases that did not have FMECAs in place. But with understanding how a pump would fail or a fan or a gearbox, those FMECAs are quite simple. So you know which technologies to use, and you also know what measurement settings you need to use to detect those failures. And I think those are most probably the very simple stuff that needs to be in place. And I think above all, commitment from management to see it through. It's going to cost more money in the first year. You know, you have to believe in it first before it will bear results. And if you do not have that commitment from your manager or the plant management, then it will become a very difficult thing to show that reliability could provide results. Unless you really are lucky and you catch a very huge item in the beginning, and it will convince plant management, but mostly it's a game of faith.
Yeah, absolutely. Ron Moore, I believe it was in his book, he talked about the bow wave effect for reliability. Yep. That upfront cost that comes up, but then you have that decreasing cost after that initial investment period, whether it's 6 months, a year, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree that, you know, organizations have to consider that. We have to take that leap of faith. But before we take that leap of faith, we have to make sure that we have that good, robust plan in place. You know, we're building up for short, quick wins to build buy-in and all those other things.
So, you know, James, what I see sometimes happening in organizations is that I say, yeah, first we're going to do FMECAs for every piece of equipment in our plant. And they get stuck in these FMECA meetings for maybe a year or two. And the results from that is that they have maybe two or three files full of failure mode and effect analysis, but no results. You know, there's no benefit in all the effort that they've stuck into the FMECAs. And then the whole reliability program gets canned because of the lack of any initial results. So my suggestion is also start small. You know, if a company knows that they've got 500 rotating assets in the plant, it's no sense to try and start with 500 rotating assets all at once. But you definitely know the 50 that will give you the biggest benefit. You know, start with those. And if you're going to start with 500 assets, your maintenance department most probably will not cope with the workload that's going to come their way. So if you start small, they most probably will be able to cope and handle the initial 50 assets and correct whatever errors there are. If it's a
poor foundation or a misalignment or an imbalance or whatever it might be, you know. And once you got that 50 under control, take another 50 and take another 50 and build your program in this way. And the second thing is, don't start with all technologies at once. I mean, most probably there's a couple of technologies that will provide you the most benefit. But if you're going to do a vibration, infrared, a motor current evaluation, oil analysis, all at once on one asset, you might get the feeling that you're never going to win, you know. So sometimes it's just try to get vibration under control, then introduce oil analysis, then introduce another technology. And eventually you get to the point where all the failures and all the failure mechanisms will be covered. But initially, you might just want to get to the point where you will get the most benefit from your buck, you know.
Yep, absolutely. This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. You know, we're aiming for those short wins, biggest bang for the buck. You know, we're going to leverage all this different technology. How do organizations take a holistic approach to predictive maintenance then? We have all these systems that don't talk to each other. You know, we might not have that roadmap to implement properly. How do we really take that holistic approach?
I think for us, it was one. I mean, we are a service organization based in Holland, and we struggled with the idea of how to get a holistic approach in how do we get all the data into one environment. We are very, very fortunate. We work with some of the largest organizations in the world, and which have a very clear idea of how they want to proceed with reliability, you know. And we get challenged very often about how do we improve and how do we improve our systems. So for us, it was very important to create something where we would have all the technologies in one environment. So that's the first step for me. The second step is that we want to make sure that we reduce the admin load as much as possible. So we want to make sure we only build the database once, make sure that we incorporate as much visual aid as we can, do this in as effective manner that we could. But taking that away, we want to empower either local teams or local subcontractors to reduce the need to travel or to reduce the need to actually spend any hours on site. In Holland, we have a very unfortunate situation that unemployment is quite low. But this also means that the availability of labor is extremely scarce. So when you have a very good analyst, you actually want to make sure he spends as much time adding value to your process and not have to travel and collect data. So the data collection had to be pushed lower into the organization and has to become very simple and cost effective. If you look at the incorporation of oil analysis, I don't want to have a external PDF or external database or a website that I need to approach to get my oil analysis results. I want this all in the same environment. So when I open my environment and I look at an asset, I want to see in one picture what is the status and where do I need to focus. So what you provide for a reliability engineer, a client, is that he could see in one go, listen, what do I need to do today that will allow me to produce tomorrow, you know? And how can I do this in a cost-effective way? I've got 8 hours today. I need to do the maximum that I can today. So it's a very important fact that you reduce the waste in terms of switching between programs, trying to push things to an Excel sheet to get insight into, okay, what's the long-term development on this asset and how would I predict when it will actually fail? The other thing is that when we talk about a holistic approach, what you see nowadays developing is that some suppliers has an handheld. Some suppliers supply a very smart sensor. Some even provide you with an online system, and none of them actually talk to each other. So, I mean, what is really annoying is that actually I want my clever sensor, my handheld, which is route-based, or my online system is for a very critical system, should be all in one environment. So I want to be able to see all of that in one go. And that was the other approach for holistic that I think that, okay, that needs to be standardized. It needs to be all in one. Whether I create a sensor that's based on LoRa, or I have a Bluetooth 5 mesh sensor, or I have a normal sensor that's just connected through a wire to an online system. I want to be able to see all of that in one environment. So that's some of the things that we have done to create a holistic approach. The other things, which sounds very simple, is that we said, listen, if a technician is busy to collect data for vibration, what's the problem that he can do at the same time to do a visual inspection on an asset? I want him to take a picture of the asset. I want to ask him very specific questions about that asset that he needs to answer for me. So while he's standing there doing vibration data collection, he's also doing a different task for me. So that means that he doesn't go twice to the same asset. He's doing two tasks at the same time within the same app. And this makes this a very cost-effective, a very rewarding activity as well, because now you actually enable technicians that might become, I would say, even frustrated because they cannot grow. There's no growth for them in the organization. And now suddenly you start to challenge them with utilizing different technologies, different techniques, some things that they thought would never be within their reach, you know. And now suddenly they become a very valuable asset for the organization.
All right, excellent. So that holistic approach, they're not just taking that vibration readings, they might be doing an inspection there, but everything's connected, everything's working. All that asset data, whether it's process data or condition data, is all in one system, easy to see.
Yes, yes.
Now, what are the benefits to taking this holistic approach to predictive maintenance versus the traditional approach?
I think the biggest benefit is that you get insights that you've never had before. When you combine process data with condition monitoring data, you get to a scenario where you can really start to understand what's happening in the asset, and you start to eliminate false alarms, or you start to eliminate the need to actually do maintenance activities, which does not really require any activity. I can give you an example. Say, for instance, you take a wind turbine, and if you just measure vibration on the wind turbine and you will measure a high vibration level, it's very difficult to determine whether that vibration level is a alarm or not. But once you provide also content around it, or you provide the wind speed, the wind direction, whether we have produced energy or not, what the pitch angle were of the blades, now suddenly the vibration data is enriched with a different type of data source, and you can really start to eliminate the false alarms. But furthermore, if you look at an even wider holistic approach, is that when you look at one wind turbine, and now suddenly you have the ability to compare multiple turbines of the same class and the same build, you can start comparing those in one wind park. And if you look one step further, you can compare them between different wind parks. And now suddenly you don't look at only reliability, but you look at performance. So you understand what's going on within a wind park and why some wind turbine generate more power than the other one. And this can be maintenance related. It can be viscosity of oil, because, I mean, we have inline oil sensors, so we can measure water content or viscosity or particles inline on a continuous basis. And now suddenly you get this really holistic approach, and it's not only applying to reliability or can we still produce, but it's can we produce to the optimum level that we could, you know, and that's really the power of it.
All right, excellent. So tremendous amount of benefits to this holistic approach. What do we actually have to do to implement this then? What is required to get this holistic approach in place?
Yeah, I think first of all, as I said before, it's a belief in that this will be bringing benefit to our organization. I think we are fortunate. We have a lot of reference cases now. So it also allows potential customers to really talk to clients and have references that could provide them with the information needed. I think secondly is that you have to have commitment. Commitment from within the organization, commitment from a senior level, managers, but also commitment to agree that this would, that the investment would be before the benefit, you know. Then there is also that technology should be accepted within the organization. If your organization is still in the ban of no, we not share process data, no, we're not willing to allow either service companies or tech companies to help us to get the most out of our data, then most probably you are not ready for this. The other thing that you shouldn't forget is that once you measure something and you're not going to do anything with that information, in other words, it just become complacent after receiving that information, it's still not going to deliver any benefit. So you and your organization has to be in a position to act upon the information provided. If that requires you to do modifications or to change operating procedures or to change maintenance procedures, then you should be in a position to make those changes and get it through the organization. Because at the end of the day, reliability is not only about the ability to measure and to provide information, it's also to act upon it and to provide feedback again and to change the, to close the loop. Because only then you will become a more reliable production plant, and only then you would actually gain the benefit of what we are busy with. So yeah, there's a whole host of things. I mean, you can think about precision maintenance for technicians. You know, if you are used to doing alignment with a straight edge, most probably you're not going to get the most out of your reliability data that you collect and that you want to do something with. So it also requires organization development. It also requires skills development. But end of the day, it's an amalgamation of multiple factors that would provide the end result. And the end result is that you want to produce more with the same resources, with the same people, and the bottom line profit should benefit from that. But also organizations will benefit from that. You will not be able, or you won't have to go work on a Saturday night or on Christmas evening. You know, it will provide rest and stability, and those are things that that will become more and more important as labor and the availability of labor becomes scarcer. So I think in a social way, a very, very important factor to address in the coming years.
Yep, absolutely. Now, there's a lot of benefits and there's a lot that goes into putting this holistic program into place. What is the one thing you would tell those that are looking to implement predictive maintenance or a holistic predictive maintenance program? What's that word of wisdom you want to share?
Well, I think it's very much about belief for me. You either believe it or you don't. And if you do, make sure of the facts. But if you don't, try to understand why. So I think if you start with maintenance and you start with reliability, and especially if you want to approach it in a holistic manner, then I think it's all about getting the facts right. I always say there's a lot of systems out there, but not all of them were created equally, and that's for hardware, it's for software, it's for everything that you, but very few of our colleagues really understand the difference between a good and a bad system. So getting information, getting yourself clued up on what's the differences and what to look for and why those differences are important, and what the constraints are and what the positives would be for spending maybe slightly more or changing a parameter or changing a sensor or whatever. So there is, for me, two things. You have to believe and make sure you are informed well before you make a decision.
All right. Great advice. You know, making sure you understand the differences between the systems, will those systems meet your needs, you know, and having that faith that this is going to work.
Yes.
Now, what's the one thing you think makes the biggest difference in being successful with predictive maintenance? Is it that follow-up and actually acting on those findings? Is it, you know, the right system? What is it?
I think all the, for me, all the individual, I would say all the individual parameters that makes up the links or makes up the circle has to be in place. I mean, if you measure with sensors that's not capable of measuring at the right frequency, you will not detect the error. If you detect the error and you do the diagnostics on it and you do that faulty, you will not detect the error. If you get the information and you do not act upon it, you will not be more reliable. If you do act upon it, but you do it in a poor manner, you will not be more reliable. So all of those things are important. But I think from my perspective, I think it is very often that we have a lot of this in place, but we just manage it maybe not in the right way, you know. So it's also making sure that we keep people accountable for what they need to do and how they need to do it. But also on the other hand, it's about making sure that we buy the right tech and that we install it in the right way and that we use it for what it's meant for. And so knowledge is a very, very important part of this. But I think end of the day, it's having an inspiring person at the head of this and getting it managed through the organization. Someone that can convince management of the need for it, somebody that can convince colleagues to go with him on this road, and end of the day, making sure that we get the maximum benefit out of it within the shortest period of time. So early gains are very important for belief. And sometimes we really know that you're as good as the last analysis that you've done or the last fault that you didn't see. So it's also a little bit the ability to ensure that you've got enough credits that one time when it does go wrong, that they don't pull the plug on it, you know?
All right. Excellent. So, you know, having that leader, having all the pieces in place, you know, it takes a lot to make a PDM program work.
Yes.
Now, what's the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today? Is it to go learn about PDM? Is it to think about how do we apply it? What's that one thing?
I mean, if you see a successful company that's implemented reliability successfully, try and learn from them, especially if it's not a competitor. They would most probably be very open about it and would share with you the reasons why their program has been successful or has failed or what lessons they have learned. So try not to make the same mistakes. Secondly is if you have a service provider in your vicinity that you can have a trust relationship with, try to learn as much as possible before you commit to a too big a piece of your budget. And thirdly, make sure that you get yourself up to speed. I mean, there's many congresses, many training facilities and programs out there, but training in itself does not make you an expert. Training provides you with information, and I think experience makes you an expert. So if you're long enough in the subject and you're long enough around, you become an expert. But taking a one-week training course does not make you an expert on reliability. So I think it's also understanding where the limitations are and how to differentiate between what is good and bad. I think those are very important things to take with. And what I would really like to inspire people about is that try to learn as much as possible from your colleague companies or your competitors even, and see what is out there, because there's plenty of stuff happening. IoT is hot. I mean, it's really, in Europe, it's really taking flight, you know, and I'm sure in the States, it's the same situation. So for me, it's there's plenty of opportunity and try to utilize that. I think one thing I understand, if you do nothing, you will be left behind. And I think in the coming years, your ability to be competitive would greatly demand you to be very reliable and to be absolutely in the driving seat when it comes to can I deliver on time with the right quality at the right price, you know?
Absolutely. It is a big topic here over in North America as well. And like you said, if you don't do anything, you'll definitely be left behind.
For sure. Well, Martin, that's absolutely true.
Before we go, where can people find out more about you, Uptime Works, the holistic approach to PDM? Where can they learn more about all this great stuff we talked about today?
Of course, our website, www.uptimeworks.com. It's a website. We are based in Holland. My contact details are on there. They can drop me an email. I'll make sure that there's a link provided for that. And of course, we are more than willing and happy to speak with your listeners and with interested people. I think we have learned a lot in the last years, and we are very open and willing to share our experience and everything we have learned.
All right. Excellent. Well, I will make sure to put links to that in the show notes. All those great things. Are there any conferences that are coming up that you're going to be presenting at?
At this stage, we don't have anything scheduled. We are basically getting our program and our product ready for commercial activities in the coming period. So there's a lot of emphasis on getting our marketing and sales activities out there. So for us, 2020 would be new opportunities. We make sure we post those with conferences and presentations. For us at this stage, it's very much getting our name out there and making sure that we get the product launched.
All right. Excellent. Well, I will make sure to put Uptime Works and your LinkedIn profile, and we'll put your email address in the show notes so people can easily get in touch with you. Well, Martin, I want to thank you for taking the time today to share your knowledge on predictive maintenance with us. Definitely some new insights, specifically around that holistic approach, doing multiple things at once. I think that's a huge, huge difference in how organizations traditionally approached PDM. So thank you so much.
James, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. And thank you very much.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.